Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Back on Zoom again, so if you're just tuning in, you can watch today's program, at least part of it, by going to prn.live, scrolling down to the archives, and scrolling to Gary Nall show, and you can watch this. Our first study today comes from Zhejiang University in China, and it's about black tea. Why black tea? Because this one, based upon a meta-analysis, meaning examining many different studies, showed that it could lower your cholesterol. Regular consumption of black tea may reduce the bad LDL cholesterol levels, but it has no effect on the good HDL cholesterol levels. These were randomized controlled studies. And so that's important, because a lot of people in America don't drink tea, drink coffee. And coffee's not good for you for many different reasons, not the least of which is that it can cause problems with your digestive acids, hydrochloric acid, because when you look at the green organic coffee bean, it's loaded with antioxidants and nutrition. But once you brew it and process it, then it ends up being highly anabolic, it is highly acidic, and it's not good for you. In any case, this was published in Clinical Nutrition, a peer-reviewed journal. So while the majority of science on tea has looked at green tea and oolong tea, this one shows the benefit of black tea. And by the way, green tea contains about 30 to 40% of water extractable polyphenols, while black tea contains about 3 to 10%. Oolong tea is semi-fermented tea and is somewhere between green tea and black tea. And the four primary polyphenols found in fresh tea leaves are EGCG, and those are very beneficial. They also have anti-cancer properties, but that's a separate study. And there's a group of chemicals in the tea, green tea, oolong, or black tea, called catechins, C-A-T-E-C-H-I-N-S, and they regulate your LDL cholesterol and inhibit the absorption of cholesterol in the intestine while also increasing the rate of conversion of cholesterol to bile acids. So something is happening every time you have a glass of tea at the cellular level that's good for you. Our next study, and by the way, all these studies come from the National Library of Medicine, is from the University of Nebraska. It's about something we almost never think much about, and that is all of the plastic that we use. I mean, when most people go to microwave something, they put it in a plastic container, aluminum container, put it in, take it out, it's ready to eat. Well, what's not good is that plastics used for baby food packaging were found to release large numbers of microparticles when microwaved. A team of food scientists and engineers and environmental specialists at the University of Nebraska has found that high numbers of microplastic particles are released by plastic baby pouches when heated in a microwave oven. This was published in the Journal of Environmental Science and Technology. Now, we've done a lot of programs on paying attention to things that don't end up getting into your body that you don't want, like aluminum. And that's why we don't. Now, something that affects a lot of Americans, kidney stones. Okay, what do you do about them? Well, one thing University of California at San Diego and Duke University found is that the pain of passing a kidney stone has been described as on par with natural childbirth. However, urologists are increasingly prescribing an accessible natural remedy for kidney stones. Guess what it is? Lemonade. That's correct. Make your own lemonade. Citric acid-rich lemon juice in the form of lemonade has proven highly effective in preventing kidney stones or even slowing their formation by a substantial margin. And now, if you've ever spoken with someone who has a kidney stone, you know that they're, unfortunately, they're in a great deal of pain. And what they're generally prescribed is potassium citrate. However, lemons and lemon juice contain the highest concentrations of natural citrate. So making lemonade is an excellent, natural, non-toxic alternative. And that's two different universities found this out. In fact, it was at the Duke University Comprehensive Kidney Stone Center that found this to be really important. So, something we can do. Also from Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine, living near green space makes you about 2.5 years younger. Yeah. City parks and green spaces help counter heat. They boost biodiversity and instill a sense of calm in the urban jungle. And that's why I believe that we should have a Marshall Program in every major city in America, and especially in poor neighborhoods, where we go in and we tear down old abandoned or dilapidated buildings, and we put in green space parks. Now, we have these scattered throughout Manhattan in the boroughs, but these are small, you know, but they're almost all done by volunteers, and the neighborhood respects them. You can go in them anytime and just hang out with nature and the birds and butterflies in season. So why not do that on a national level? They also help slow biological aging. With people who have access to green spaces, you're going to live 2.5 years longer at the biological level than people who do not have this. And this was published in the Prairie View Journal Science Advances. So just being around nature, which is one of the reasons that I love being where I'm at and have always as an adult. Yes, I had an apartment in the city, but on the weekends I would go upstate. For 14 years, I went up to a little tiny area, not populated. I was into Buck Road up in Stone Ridge, and it was called Stone Ridge because there was just stones everywhere. So I just took all the muck from hundreds of years out of the pond on the property. It took 6 months for it all to drain, but when it drained, I had this wonderful rich soil that was a foot high, and I made this huge organic garden, and everything you put in the ground just grew like crazy. In fact, many of you, thousands of you, had come up there for workshops. We did all these free weekend workshops on Sundays. People bring their families up. Sometimes we'd have 100 cars out there in a field, and then people would learn about how to make tofu and tempeh. I had a bunch of goats because goat dairy had gone broke, and instead of killing the goats, they gave them to me, and then we'd show people how to make goat ice cream. Yeah, goat milk ice cream. We'd take some honey out of the beehive and some fruit and some nuts, like walnuts, and we made wonderful ice cream. But you could also make cheeses, because a lot of people are not allergic to goat's milk. And by the way, that's one of the substitutes we use for abandoned baby animals that need the colostrum, need the mother's milk. We give a goat formula, and they survive and thrive. In any case, the idea was you're around green space, you're around the mountains. The beautiful New York mountains are just spectacular, and the small little hamlets, and had a 50-acre farm there. And so you wake up and you're around nature throughout the whole day. Now I'm around nature also. So if you can get out of the city, do so. If you had the wherewithal with you and maybe some friends to move and create your own little intentional community where you all chip in, then you're going to be in the best place of all. Because today most of the work we do can be done, well, like I'm doing. I'm broadcasting here, video streaming here into our studios in New York City, where our really good team goes to work and then sends us out on the internet all over the world. So didn't you be able to used to do this? Now we can. So think about that. All right. More green space, the longer you live, the healthier you are, the less stress you are. In fact, they've now been able to determine that when they examine your DNA, chemical modifications known as methylation, that the methylated measurement of your cells gets you a longer lifespan. The more green and blue oceans, rivers, creeks, streams, all are terrific. Now, a lot of people have taken the benzodiazepine, and its use now has been associated with brain injury, job loss, and suicide. That's according to two universities, University of Colorado and Vanderbilt University. And it's been its use and discontinuation associated with nervous system injury and negative life effects that continue after discontinuation. So just stopping is not enough. It's how you stop. And this is proven by research at the University of Colorado and Schultz Medical Campus. And it's been prescribed for decades. And then you end up with long-term neurological complications, according to the assistant professor of psychiatry at the university. So one more reason why we should be very conscious of what we're taking into our body And just don't assume that because everyone else is taking something, you too should take it. And because though it can nullify some of the adverse effects, it doesn't help you. In fact, it gives you low energy, difficulty in focusing, memory loss, anxiety, insomnia, sensitivity to light and sounds, digestive problems, symptoms triggered by food and drink, muscle weakness, and body pain. But why not just go through talk therapy? And that would be much better. In fact, ready for this? It can sustain negative life impacts. In fact, notably, 54.4% of respondents reported suicidal thoughts and attempted suicide. All right? We don't need it. We don't need the benzos in our body. In fact, for those of you who are watching right now, let me inform you that normally when I finish an important documentary, and this is a very important one, important for every single person in this audience, not just you directly, but also people you know, it took me over 6 years to complete this. And it's called Manufacturing Madness. And it's an honest look and a historical look with some of the greatest scholars on the planet. We had to go to Scotland and other places around the world to bring in these great minds, and I mean they're great minds, to give their comments upon how we're dealing with depression and anxiety and loneliness and insecurity and uncertainty. Well, not well. We have more suicides, more people dying from taking drugs like fentanyl than ever before in our history. So we've got problems, but we have the wrong solutions, the wrong protocols. But because they've been codified into a ritualistic, almost cult-like belief that we got depression, take this drug. Got anxiety, take that drug. Why not find ways of dealing with the problem, not just tamping down the symptoms, especially when if you look at the label, and we show this, depression, take this drug. What's the number one side effect in this drug? Depression. Anxiety, take this drug, this anti-anxiety drug. What's the number one side effect? Anxiety. That makes no sense. So this is going to be premiered. Normally I would come to New York and I would premiere in a large theater, you know, like AMC down on 42nd Street that holds 1,000 people, and we've done that. We've booked dozens of theaters as a fundraiser for our sister station where I've been for 47 years and 3 months. Well, just think with it. In the next year, it'll be 48 years, approaching 50 years on the air. And but this time around, because the station does not have enough people working for it, we couldn't do that. I volunteered it. Instead, I'm only going to do one showing only. And it's going to be in just a week from Sunday, on the 7th at 1 o'clock, over the internet. It's going to be a webinar. I'll do a lecture. We'll show the film first. It's powerful. I mean, it is powerful. If you have a weak stomach, you won't want to watch it. It's not a feel-good film. It's a very wake-up call film. It tells you the truth, and sometimes the truth hurts. How we've all been duped. Anyhow, it's going to start at 1 o'clock. It goes for 2 hours and 7 minutes. Then I'm going to talk. Then I'm going to answer your questions. All right? So if you want to join us in that experience, that webinar on Manufacturing Madness, deals with everything involving our mental health, then just go to GaryNoll.com and you can sign up, or you can call our office and sign up. You can sign up easily. Just go to GaryNoll.com. So in any case, finally today, we're looking at a Temple University study about homocysteine. Now, we know that homocysteine is one of the worst elevating stress hormones in the body. So when you have an elevated homocysteine level, let's say at 10 to 14, you're in danger of having heart attack or stroke, ideally around 2, 3, or 4. But when you start getting up into the 20s, 30s, and 40s, oh, you're Christopher Walken in the last scene of Deer Hunter in a bar playing Russian roulette with your life. You don't want to do that. So take the B-complex. That's very important. And B1, B6, B12 and folic acid, and that helps bring it down. But just so you know, according to Temple University, they did a study that highlights the vital role of the B-complex vitamins in controlling homocysteine and reveals how elevated levels of this amino acid can set the stage for Alzheimer's disease and other forms of dementia. That we didn't know. We knew heart attack and stroke, yes, but now add in dementia and Alzheimer's? And this was published in Molecular Psychiatry. So take your B-complex every day without fail. And that's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a break and come back. And we've got a whole lot of interesting film clips to show you, commentary. I'm going to continue my commentary today on 5G, part 3. And the article is published on GaryNoll.com under articles under 5G. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. More than anything, I'm going to hold my own thoughts, and I'd like you to share yours in our open forum. Give us a call at 888-874-4888 on some of the different things that I'm going to share with you. And by the way, we had my article on why we did not use known and proven life-saving medications, FDA-approved medications, at the beginning of the pandemic on ivermectin. The politics of it, how it was orchestrated, how it was a whole planned campaign. And I wrote the article with the intent of putting this into the hands of law firms to start bringing actions against those individuals responsible for knowing the truth and hiding it, and then not only hiding the truth, but destroying anyone's reputation who spoke the truth. Well, one of our listeners, who is a citizen journalist, does a lot of writing, investigative reporting. Her name is Sharon Willems. Also, she's from West Virginia, Moundsville, just short distance from my hometown, Parkersburg. We've known each other for almost 50 years. And she got that article published in a New York paper, the full article. And that's surprising because it was rather long. And that spreads the word, especially to people who may have believed only the official narrative and didn't know there was another side to the story, because that other side wasn't allowed to be spoken. Censorship. Well, now, on this one, we hope that all the people in the audience not just read the article, but share it with other people. It's a lot of scholarship. And just so you know, we take vetting very seriously, and I have for decades. In fact, to make sure that none of my articles had to be retracted or something that was wrong in them could be used to try to discredit it, we hired a top Harvard Law graduate who went over every article and saw that it had to be proven with multiple sources, and never had one retracted. And I'm approaching 1,000 articles published. So it's worked. And in this case, we had a very intrepid research editor. Her name is Katie, and she certainly is doing a great job making sure that all of the information that we present on this topic is accurate, comes from peer-reviewed literature, not opinion. But also, I just want to give a shout-out to a person in this audience who has done as much as anyone, if not more than almost everyone, in informing you about the dangers and how they spray toxic chemicals in our environment. I don't know if Mitchell Cohen has a copy, but I do, of the photograph where there was an open hearing of the city council where we had a chance to present evidence against open air spraying. And I presented a lot of scientific papers. That's where I met Mitch also. But there was someone else who's been around for at least 23 years. He just celebrated a birthday. Her name is Catherine Swan. So, Catherine Swan, we thank you. You just hit 60, big 6-0. Well, you have the energy, the dynamic fortitude, and the conscious awareness to keep informing the people without any salary, without any thank you in most cases. But we recognize your work, and we appreciate it. So thank you, Catherine Swan. Now, I also just want to take a challenge over And again, not in any denigrating manner, I don't do that, but instead just as a heads up to the good people over at USA Today. Earlier this week, you stated that, you know, there shouldn't be any more questions about the safety and efficacy of the vaccines. That's been settled. Well, think about this then. And since you're one of the world's largest news services, you should have read Joel S. Hirshhorn's report, quote, Denmark data shows very wide COVID vaccine adverse impacts. Sometimes a figure or graph tells an important story. Here are excerpts from the article, Batch-Dependent Safety of the RNA Vaccine. Quote, vaccination has been widely implemented for mitigation of coronavirus disease. And then it goes on to talk about that. But then it says, it talks about clinical data on individual vaccine batch levels have not been reported in batch-dependent variations in the clinical efficacy and safety of authorized vaccines would appear to be highly unlikely. However, not least in view of the emergency use market authorization and rapid implementation of large-scale vaccination programs, the possibility of batch-dependent variation appears worthy of investigation. We therefore examine rates of the vaccines between different batches. A total of 10,793,766 doses were administered to 4,026,575 persons with the use of 52 different vaccine batches. And then it gives all that. Now, here's what it says. It says that a lot of these, a great many, had adverse effects. Why wasn't that shown? Why weren't we told? Why wasn't it stopped immediately? Because another article shows how many young people have died, and it is staggering. So we are collecting right now, Richard Gale and myself, we're collecting every video clip, every television, every press conference, every time someone in Congress came forward and says, you must vaccinate your children, like Dr. Lewinsky and the former head of the FDA and members of the FDA panel and all these talking heads, so-called experts on all of the NBC and CNBC and all the other Rachel Maddow shows. They were all wrong. They were dead wrong. There was zero chance of children dying of COVID and babies and toddlers. And now young people dying, it's just through the roof. We've never seen this before in world history. And we have lots of data supporting it. I mean, lots and lots of quality studies that they can't control because it didn't come from then. It came from after the fact. Remember, put this in proper perspective. At the beginning, people who didn't have a background in science, the vast majority don't, and even those who have a background in science or medicine don't have a background in genetic engineering or molecular biology. So they simply had to trust. Even look, all the people that we've had on this program who I would normally debate, I would not support them. I would challenge them because the way they've approached disease, which I feel is just, it's so limited. I do not question their integrity or their desire to see improvements, but if you keep doing the same protocols and your patients keep dying at a very high level, at what point, if ever, do you simply say, you know, in cancer, we've treated from day one of their diagnosis. We've treated about 99% of all the people who've had cancer. And my goodness, we're losing over 500,000 number a year. Well, okay, let's go back 30 years. You've lost 15 million people. You don't think that's a problem? 15 million dead people who might have had a chance of survival? Ah, but there's the rub. You dictate the protocols and you don't accept anything else. In fact, you attack everything else. So that's where we're at. This is infantilism at the professional level. These are like when you're 7 years old and you dress up in your dad's suit and you run in the room and it's just hanging on the floor and everybody laughs and that's cute. Well, that's what our medical community is like today, with the exception of emergency medicine. People who hold the moniker of the experts, but are failing. And what time are we going to stop trusting these experts? Well, we trust them on the vaccines, and now we're seeing the deadly legacy. And this is just one study. out of them. And also there was a huge amount of placebos. Well, then at what point do you compare your placebo with your group? Because it was not done to say that you had showed efficacy, and you can't show it. Here's a separate study, and quote, Danish scientists uncovered compelling evidence that a significant percentage of the batches of Pfizer vaccine distributed in the European Union likely consisted of placebos, and the non-placebo batches demonstrated higher than normal severe adverse events in recipients, promoting the researchers to call for further investigation. And this is from Dr. Michael Nevrotikis. Well, what was the outcome? There was no outcome because none of this was allowed to be known. So we have bad outcomes and we hide it, yes. So USA Today, before you say this is all settled, there's a consensus. Yeah, the consensus of everyone complicit in following the wrong protocols for their own economic or political or ideological needs. But how about all the thousands of scientists, hundreds of thousands of scientists and physicians who've now signed the Great Barrington Declaration and who say you were wrong about everything? So when are you going to open up and have some of your journalists contact those of us who know what we're talking about? Because clearly, mainstream media does not. Just want to share those thoughts with you. Oh, and by the way, for those who want to see the premiere of something that will really shake you, I mean, when I'm behind a camera and I'm directing a film and I know what I want in order to hopefully tell a story through the person's eyes who I'm filming. And whether it's a victim, and I have those, or whether it's one of the world's leading experts on the history of psychiatry, very difficult to interview this person. It took us years. And then one of the greatest scientists in the world in Scotland, another one in Great Britain, all over the world we had to get this filming done. But we now have it. It's called Manufacturing Madness. And there's only one showing could happen, and that is in a week from Sunday, 1 o'clock on the 7th of July. And our space is limited. It's a webinar. You're going to see the film. I'm going to do a discussion, then take questions. So if you want to see something that tells you the truth about everything you've been lied to concerning depression, anxiety, ADD and ADHD, loneliness, call this number. Join us. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Now, today we are continuing with part three of our ongoing series on 5G. And keep in mind, I'm connecting 5G to all these other phenomena like transhumanism, artificial intelligence, smart cities, because that's the real story of its significance. That's why it's being pushed. And they've got a masterful public relations program around it. Today, we're going to talk about health and safety. And we begin by a physician. The physician's name is Sharon Goldberg. She was given just 5 minutes to speak. She had known that in advance, so she had to leave out almost everything she wanted to say. The notes from her expert testimony to the Michigan State House Energy Policy Committee in October 2018, expressing her opposition to Senate Bill 637, which would standardize permits, fees, right-of-way use, and other regulations of wireless service providers for coming 5G services posted online. But she didn't read most of them in her address to the committee members. So she summarized up this way, quote, wireless radiation has biological effects, period. This is no longer a subject for debate when we look at PubMed and the peer-reviewed literature. These effects are seen in all life forms, plants, animals, insects, microbes, in humans. We have clear evidence of cancer now. There is no question. We have evidence of DNA damage, cardiomyopathy, which is the precursor to congestive heart failure, neuropsychiatric effects. 5G is an untested application of a technology we know is harmful. We know it from the science. In academics, this is called human subjects research. end quote. Between August 2016 and September 2018, over 400 new studies on electromagnetic radiation risks were compiled by public health professor Joel Moskowitz at the University of California at Berkeley. These studies cover earlier generation technologies, 5G, where has already been heavily integrated into the wireless infrastructure, and once it is fully erected as planned, will create a much denser and more powerful electromagnetic grid. The cell towers and antennas used in prior generations of wireless infrastructure made use of a single antenna broadcasting over a wide sweep of land, whereas the 5G small cell base stations and 5G devices will contain numerous antenna arranged in phased arrays, which will work together to enable what is called beam, B-E-A-M, forming, F-O-R-M-I-N-G, or the creation of laser-like beams that can be steered and can track each other. Every 5G base station will contain hundreds of thousands of antenna, each aiming laser-like microwave beams to all devices. In an urban area, base stations could be installed as little as 100 meters, that's 328 feet apart. Every phone will contain dozens of such antenna. Now, remind you, you're putting that antenna, that cell phone, up to your head. Teenagers, adolescents, they're sleeping with their cell phone, with their laptop, under their pillow. That's beaming these signals right through their brain. The overarching question being ignored by Congress concerns 5G's public safety and environmental implications. During a Senate Conference Science and Transportation Committee hearing last February, Senator Richard Blumenthal, Democrat of Connecticut, challenged representatives from the telecommunications industry about the technology's health risks. When queried on the industry's commitment to comply with the FDA's insistence to fund, quote, independent research on EMF's biological effects, Brad Gillen, an executive vice president at CTIA, the leading trade association representing the wireless communications industry, denied there were any industry-funded studies and no research on 5G's health risks were active. None. Okay, let's stop a moment. You're going to implicate every single American in involuntarily becoming a guinea pig in one of the most lethal, dangerous, and irresponsible technologies ever unleashed, the electromagnetic pulses. And the more dense the population in urban areas, the more these people will be affected. And yet, the industry representative said, there's no research being done on this. Nor was Stephen Berry, president of the Competitive Carriers Association, aware of any ongoing research. So, Senator Blumenthal also sent a formal request to the Trump's FCC secretary requesting information about the scientific evaluation of 5G risks. What was the outcome? The FCC failed to acknowledge his request. So Trump's FCC secretary simply did what everyone else's FCC secretary does, and almost always they come from the very industry they're supposed to be overseeing, and does not supply any evidence. And so it ended, and like almost all these committees, they end and it's over. And besides the unbelievable arrogance displayed by the industry's spokesperson, from our perspective, it is perhaps worse that Senator Blumenthal, a ranking committee member and highly respected in Congress, failed to present any, and when I say any, I mean none, of the scientific literature confirming 5G's health risks. Now, almost always, without you being aware of it, I don't talk about it, but whenever I do a documentary, whenever I do a major article, investigative report that impacts public health, I send it everywhere. For example, I've sent Rachel Maddow, I've sent Keith Olbermann, I sent every liberal thinking, wrongly, that these people would say, okay, this is interesting, we'll get someone on. some of the experts cited in the article on to talk about it, since it impacts public health. Or we send it to every member of Congress. Not a word from anyone. Not one response. Because we already had the evidence. And I think that it is unfortunate that where Blumenthal, and oh, he is a hardcore corporatist, and with his power, he could have held a press conference on his own. And he could have brought this to the media's attention. He could have said, we just had a hearing, and we presented no scientific information confirming FDA's health risks. But we've been told by outside scientists and activists and physicians that this exists. Thousands upon thousands of studies exist. So shouldn't we put a moratorium on this before we go forward? Well, of course, but don't expect Blumenthal or anyone else in Congress to actually have the integrity that is needed to stand up against these special interest groups. Remember, lobbying should be outlawed. If you're really, really caring about making the public's interests first and foremost, all the public, I don't care what your political background, then you should ban all lobbying, make it a federal crime. You lobby, you go to prison for life. So the only people who are going to be talking to a legislator are in their home districts, where they go home on a regular basis, are mandated. You go home every week of the year, and you're there for 2 days. And you don't worry about fundraising. You're there to listen to what the people in your neighborhood who got you here have to say. Now, if we really cared, that's what we would do. But we don't care, so we don't do it. Instead, we allow all these lobbyists in, and they're the ones who write the bill. Do you doubt that? Doubt me. Go ahead. Challenge me. And I'll show you an article that we wrote that no one did a thing about, was sent to every member of Congress, on ALEX, the American Legislative Exchange Group, since almost 60 years or longer. They've been writing bills on behalf of 200 to 300 different major corporations. They then meet secretly with your state lobbyist, and then they give these bills to these lobbyists. Also, they give them campaign contributions or other gifts, and they say, take this back to your state legislature and pass this as a law. We have people on both Democrat and Republican that are on our side. So you have bipartisan support. That's all the media that has no interest in the truth will say, bipartisan, must be good. No, the vast majority of the laws are written by special interest groups. Wasn't it Nancy Pelosi said, well, we'll only know what's in the Affordable Care Act when we pass it into law. I mean, think of that for a moment. Did you hear one Democrat in the media say, well, this is the dumbest thing I've ever heard of? You're the head of the House and you don't even know what's in a bill? Well, none of them know what's in a bill. Ever. And that's who you put into office, and that's on you, not them. These sociopaths make themselves very apparent. It's the people who keep trusting, then something's wrong if you keep trusting the same people that lied and don't care about you. So besides the unbelievable arrogance displayed by the industry spokesperson, then what we have to do is we have to ask, okay, then why not just subpoena the FCC for ignoring his request? He has unlimited resources through the National Academy of Sciences. He could put a request in. They would give him all the studies. He also could contact the National Institutes of Health and the medical database, the EPA, the FDA. Yet he didn't cite one single study nor invite an independent medical expert to testify what we already know about 5Gs and earlier cellular generations' adverse effects on the human body. Did that impact his constituents? Not at all. Anyone else? No. Just one big corporate party. And what did one comedian, George Carlin, say? And you ain't in it. So then we have a University of Washington researcher, Dr. Henry Lai. He's a DNA research expert, and he could have been called to testify. Professor Lai was quoted in the British Medical Journal for stating, quote, I can name 600 studies showing bioeffects of microwaves off the top of my head. But he wasn't important, just pro-industry people, and that's all you ever see at these stupid committees. May 2019 Senate Judiciary Committee hearing on 5G was even more of a charade. Senators Lindsey Graham and Barbara Feinstein, completely avoided the evidence supporting 5G's detrimental effects on human, animal, insect, and environmental health. The 5G rollout was a certainty in the mind of every committee member. Questioning of industry representatives focused solely upon national security and cyber threats to the Internet of Things. Human health? We're not interested. Animal diseases? No. School children sitting at a desk where you've got a computer and Wi-Fi is going right through that child's entire body, in fact, going 100 yards beyond that? No. No. Everything is packaged in national security. Nor were the larger public consequences of safety from having all electronic systems controlled by artificial intelligence. Oh, yeah. There we bring him once again. Artificial intelligence. And suddenly being disabled or otherwise manipulated and tampered, as I mentioned yesterday. Clearly, national security, protecting the country's military, intelligence, and elite troops, health issues. Well, that wasn't important, since no modern military can realistically win a conventional war. But don't tell Lindsey Graham that, or any of the neocons in Washington, or Senator Schumer, or, of course, Bernie Sanders. What a hypocrite. God. Bernie, retire. You know, your game is old. Because you keep funding the military. They all fund the military, and they all fund the war in Yemen with Saudi Arabia. Any of them gone there to do a little video to show the consequences of the cholera epidemic? No. Did we even go down to Haiti? The Clintons go down to Haiti and George Bush, after raising $13 billion, and say, where's the money? The American Red Cross say, we got $1 billion. We built 5 homes. That's reasonable, I guess. Something like that. But these are shacks. You and I could put one of these together in about a day for about $300. So I guess spending $1 billion, oh, it doesn't go for what they say. It goes to general administration. I see. What about the cholera epidemic created by the United Nations? No news media on that. So the people who have control over the world don't seem to have any desire to control the consequences of irresponsible government health policies like 5G. And we already know you're not going to win any war on the battlefield. The next likely victory will be superpowers waging cyber warfare. And that hasn't happened yet. And who are the world's 2 leaders in cyber warfare? China and Russia. And if you ask, why haven't they used it yet? This possibility seemed foremost in the minds of our senators, but their blind spot is a massive one. In a study published in August 2018 issue of the Journal of American of Medical Imaging and Health Informatics, after an extensive review and analysis of the medical literature, researchers concluded, quote, incidence of cancer cases was remarkably higher among people who resided in 400 meters from mobile antenna in comparison to those who live further away. Inhabitants living close to cellular antennas are also at increased risk of developing neuropsychiatric complaints, end quote. Did you know that this study was published in the Journal of Medical Imaging and Health Informatics? Did you know that they had all these findings about cancer? The last time I was in New York, we ran out on Central Park, and I said, look up, see all those antenna? Those are 5G antenna. Look down the streets. You used to have trees. They cut down the trees, and now you've got these antenna. Look at your smart meter. That's all hooked up to 5G. And then ask yourself, do you have fatigue? Do you have insomnia? Are you having neurological problems? Do you have infections that you never had before? There's a whole big group of people out there, how large we don't know because it hasn't been tested, who have environmental illnesses from 5G. So, just remember, under the 5G regime, every American in a suburb or city will be living 100 meters or less from an antenna. Neither the U.S. nor China have ever felt obliged to follow UNESCO's precautionary principle to avoid, quote, morally unacceptable harm, end quote, when the science is plausible but still uncertain. In the case of 5G, the science is certain. We have thousands of studies. The harm to human life is conclusive. And in the view of Dr. Leonard Hardell, an oncology professor at University Hospital in Örebro, Sweden, it may be in violation of the Nuremberg Code. But we have to understand the Nuremberg Code is merely a code of ethics. It is not legally required. Let me just give you a sampling of some of the literature before we go forward. Nearly 100% of the studies employing real mobile phone exposures reveal adverse effects, which include associations to brain tumors, declines in animal population, and symptoms of unwellness. This was published in Biomedical Research International. Another one. Children are at greater risk than adults and absorb more microwave radiation than adults. Journal of Microscopy and Ultrastructure. The geometry of a child's head significantly increases mobile phone electromagnetic frequency absorption in the brain, eye, cortex, hippocampus, and hypothalamus. Children have especially high bone marrow conductivity, greater increased electromagnetic frequency absorption. This was published in the journal Physics and Medicine and Biology. Simultaneous exposure to lead and RF from mobile phone use was associated with increased ADHD symptoms, published in PLOS One. Chronic multiple system illness correlates electromagnetic hypersensitivity to 3 megahertz, 300 gigahertz, with headaches, concentration difficulties, sleep problems, depression, lack of energy, fatigue, and flu-like symptoms, published in Reviews of Environmental Health. Oxidative stress, and then it goes on. I have 10,000 studies. It would take 10 books to publish 1,000 studies each. And we have it all. Did you know there's a professor emeritus of biochemistry and medical science at Washington State University? His name is Dr. Martin Paul. And he also is recognized worldwide as an expert in EMF and 5Gs. Says its detrimental effects biological systems and the disease associated with wireless technologies. So you see, we have the science, we have the evidence, but they have the media, they have the scientific community's leading publications, and they have the government technocrats on their side. So right now they win. And everybody kind of applauds. Oh, good, another commercial on 6G. And oh, Elon Musk's new system where he's going to plant a chip in my brain that's smaller and smaller. It's really small, and it can read my thoughts. And yeah, 5G is a part of all this. On tomorrow, another part. Now we're going to go directly into a clip. This is interesting. And I want you to call in and tell me what you think of this. This is a clip where you have an African-American professor of equity at a university, and at some point he begins to see that the very things he's teaching the students isn't working. In fact, it's working in the opposite direction. So he writes a professional academic article, and for that he is excoriated. This is the dark side of equity. Now, we should all support, and every reasonable person would support, opportunity for all. We should never bar someone from an opportunity to see how they can advance. They shouldn't be limited. Now, their own limitations themselves. Not everyone will have the same outcome. I'm never going to be able to throw a football like Joe Montana or any other quarterback. But I don't know that they could do what I've done within all my inventions and my writings and my making a film. So we each have unique gifts. Mastering those gifts and then having opportunities is important. That's different than wanting everyone to have the same outcome. And that's one of the problems. And then basing it upon identity politics and making the color of your skin the primary reason why you should be accepted or rejected. into something that I'm opposed to. Because I see the beauty and the sacredness in all people, irrespective of their skin or cultural background. Let's hear what he has to say. I think you'll find this interesting. Then call us at 888-874-4888. Now, it's not a long clip, but it's going to go a little longer. So at one point, we're going to cut out from WBAI because they have their news at the top of the hour, or at 55 minutes. We're just going to play right through that. So BAI, the engineer, just cut us at that point and then call in if you have something to say about what you've heard. Go to the clip, please.
Diversity, equity, and inclusion are everyone's responsibility.
DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion. That sounds nice and responsible. No wonder all big companies now require employees to get training in it.
Because we understand that racial and systemic bias have many causes, sources, and ways of showing up within each of us.
Even if that's true, do you know what American companies now do to address it? Some make ritual apologies for America's past.
We want to acknowledge that the land where the Microsoft campus is situated was traditionally occupied by the Sammamish.
By proclaiming guilt, companies try to signal that now they're virtuous.
The Snohomish, the Tulalip.
It's nice to apologize.
Yes, but what is it really doing?
Eric Smith was a diversity officer at Drew University. Now he teaches at York College. Why'd you stop being a diversity officer?
I just thought it was a useless thing. There's a better way to go about doing this.
Diversity and inclusion.
Useless or not, companies continue to pay big money for trainings.
There's a whole industry now designed to cater to companies looking for a quick way to check that box. In the U.S. in 2020, DEI was a $3.4 billion industry.
Every big company.
They feel like they have to. They have to say something. They have to signal to the world that they're doing something.
Is it effective?
No. In fact, it seems to be doing worse. It seems to be making people less likely to interact with people who are unlike them, you know, because it's like a minefield now.
Less likely to interact.
After a training where you hear things about microaggressions, if you ask somebody what they do for a living, somehow that's racist, right? If you learn that, then why would you take a chance?
I better not talk to Eric because I might say something wrong.
Precisely. So now inclusion means I'm going to silence myself and not talk to the black people.
All white people are racist.
Some trainings are just divisive and dumb.
I believe that white people are born into not being human.
This is extreme, I take it.
It is extreme, but it's becoming more of the norm.
These slides were shown at a Coca-Cola diversity training.
The thesis of this training was try to be less white. They're talking about arrogance and things like that. That is by no means a white thing. The point is to demonize the other side as much as possible.
And absurdly, diversity trainings don't even do what they're supposed to do. This Harvard professor analyzed studies of them.
Sadly enough, I did not find one single study which has found that diversity training, in fact, leads to more diversity.
In fact, the Harvard Business Review reports 5 years after diversity training, the share of black women managers actually decreased.
It's not about data. It's about a power grab.
A power grab that starts in schools.
Melt to the steel bars of racism and white language supremacy.
This expert tells teachers it's racist to teach traditional English.
If you use a single standard to grade your students' languaging, you engage in racism. You actively promote white language supremacy, which is the handmaiden to white bias in the world.
Smith was in the audience.
I heard that, thought it was a bit misguided.
So Smith wrote a long and thoughtful response saying it's a disservice to minority kids not to teach standard English. For that, he was attacked.
We are professors in communication. I thought we could communicate. I was so wrong.
Instead of a discussion, people called you racist. Do you enjoy using Western modes of argument to invalidate people of color? Check your privilege.
What they saw in me was a bigger threat than anything they've seen before. A black person saying it's okay to teach black students standardized English.
An academic named Eve complained about the harm Smith consistently perpetuates.
other academics joined in to coddle Eve.
Eve spent tremendous labor, physically, intellectually, and emotionally, to write his response, and most probably took him extra time to recover from that labor. It's like they're victims everywhere.
Yes, that's the point. You have to perpetuate the victimhood. That's part of the narrative.
It just isn't even logical discussion. Has academia gone insane?
Yes. That's the short answer. Yes, it has gone insane.
I was surprised that the leader of that academic conference agreed to talk to me.
You engage in racism.
He's since grown a beard.
If you use a single standard to grade your students' languaging, you engage in racism.
Standardized English tends to exclude many groups of people.
My parents came here from Germany. They made me learn standardized English. Were they being oppressive? I mean, where would I be if they hadn't?
There are absolutely benefits to a standardized English, but that same world creates those same benefits through certain kinds of biases, and they can be bad for many folks who simply are not going to be able to meet that standard. I'm simply saying that I don't think everyone needs to be held to it.
If they're not held to it, how can they succeed?
Yeah, I think that they do. I think that they can.
He was much more measured than he'd been lecturing his fellow professors.
I think you're toning it down for my audience here, because you in your conference speech were all about this is an oppressive country and white racism, white dominance.
I tried to be rhetorical and I tried to use the moment to make a statement.
In other words, he played to the crowd.
Your students who do not embody enough of the white habits of language that make up your standards stand at your classroom doors and die for your comfort.
That anger is the norm with DEI advocates. At Stanford Law School, a judge who'd been invited to speak was stopped by angry students and Stanford's Dean of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion.
Absolute disenfranchisement of their rights and does land.
The diversity dean lectured this federal judge for 6 minutes.
Is it worth the pain that this causes and the division that this causes? You have something so incredible, important to say about Twitter and guns and COVID that is worth this impact on the division of these people.
At least the law school president later apologized, saying this violates Stanford's commitment to free speech. Good. I'm glad some sensible people push back against nonsense like this. And when it comes to DEI, this education reformer, Chris Rufo, proposes an alternative.
EMC, equality, merit, okay, and color blindness.
I like equality and merit and color blindness. Merit is a good thing.
But demanding it, we're told.
People who have no comprehension of what life is like if they were outside of the protective environment which they are in. Wow, it is just unfortunate, and it's getting worse, not better. So what are your ideas? We're out of time for you to share those ideas on the radio, but you can certainly leave them in our message, and so you can give us an oral message or a written message. Our voicemail is 862-800-6805, 862-800-6805. We'll continue to explore this and continue to look for solutions to it. Hating one another is not a solution. Censoring people is not a solution. Demeaning entire groups of people based upon their ethnicity or culture or religious values is not a solution. It's anarchy. Then who benefits from this? Follow the money trail. Follow the political identity trail. Follow who gains when we're divided. And then you'll see who's really behind all this. I'm Gary Nall. We keep this forum open and progressive. Have a nice day, everyone. Stay tuned for, I don't know if she's live or a repeat, Utrecht Lead.